Are we going to have a mailbag jingle?
I will try to, sure.
No.
Mailbag, mailbag. We're going to open the mailbag. Mail.
Roll.
Rolling for host. 1 to 20.
I'm not at the page yet.
3. 3.
6.
Are you, what? Are you fucking kidding me? Ugh. Never going to host again.
5.
Chaz is on a streak.
Oh.
5.
Ooh, oh, Josh just 5. Broke the streak.
Low roll. Winning with the 6.
Damn.
All right. Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. I'm Josh. There's Mike.
Sup.
There's Charles.
Sup.
And we're going to talk about stuff that isn't games and stuff that is
plosive.
Games.
Just plosive. Ways to braise your meat. That's the whole episode. 2 hours of meat braising.
Braising meat.
All right, Charles, how was your week?
My week was good.
Hey, Charles.
My week was good, you guys. My 2-year-old turned 2, and we had the birthday party, and it was construction themed because he's really into construction stuff. So
I enjoyed the tape across the trees.
Yeah, we had caution tape across the
but
trees.
But I thought dead people were there first. I didn't get it.
I didn't go because I don't care about your child or you.
You know what? I thought, like, while we were there, I was like, oh, I could have invited Josh, and I hope you didn't feel bad that I didn't invite you, but I was like,
well,
like,
I disinvited
I
Josh.
Only sort of want to go to the birthday party. Like, I love my son, but this is a hassle.
See, what Charles really wanted to be doing on a Saturday was making homemade churros.
Yeah.
Really. Which is the best thing in life.
So,
did you hear that, Jess?
You should have avoided inviting yourself.
Really, yeah. So I didn't
quietly
even
left yourself off the list.
I was like, maybe I should have invited Josh. And I'm like, nah, forget it. He wouldn't have. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, that was a thing.
Best party ever.
non-gamey type stuff. I finished a couple books. I actually finished the book I talked about a while ago, 1Q84.
Yeah,
set in Japan. I finally finished that. I actually finished that last week, but we had such a long show and I forgot to talk about it. So that's a really good book. Listen to the show in which we talk about it. Very, very fascinating, very interesting, really weird, comes from a weird perspective that, like, it's one of those books where it's sort of intuitive and it's fun to read, but you read it and go, like, I would never in 400 years come up with this storyline.
That's an oddly specific time period.
401, 399, like, yeah. Within those
500 years, though, definitely.
I would never get there. So that's fascinating. I also finished, I got, and within like 3 days, burned through 800 pages of the latest Robert Jordan book. The
Wheel of Time thing?
Yes, book 13.
Do you work?
Second to last. Yes, I work.
You do work?
Well, I did this in lieu of watching TV and playing games and stuff. Like, I just spent 3 days and blasted through the whole thing.
Man. How new is it?
That's dedication.
It's the most recent one. I think it's actually been out for, I don't know, a couple months. I missed it right when it came out.
Is it written by not him?
It is. So what happened was he was diagnosed with a terminal illness before he finished the series. But he had like 2.5 years or something before he actually died. And so in that time,
how convenient for an author, like, writing a long series of books.
Yeah.
Right. Honestly, that's
better
lucky,
than
but
not having that chance.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You get the chance to sort of at least direct your opus to its conclusion. He had the time to pick the author that he thought would best to handpick that person, so I picked Brandon Sanderson. I have not read anything by that guy other than the Robert Jordan, the Wheel of Time books. And so he and that guy, you know, sequestered themselves for several months and, like, outlined the complete plot structure of the last, you know, 4 books or whatever it was.
Right.
So that's cool. And it's like, this is what he wanted to do. And then the guy has been writing him. And he's written 2. So I guess it's 3. He finished the last 3 books, Brandon Sanderson, and they're good.
They hold up.
They read
Are
a
they
lot
as
like
good?
They basically read like the Robert Jordan ones.
So you read the last one? Which one did you read just now?
I just finished the second to last book, and okay. The last one is not yet out.
Okay,
so that's still being written. But It was good. I blasted through that. I've been reading that those books since, I think, middle school. Like, coming up on two decades at this point, you know.
Wow.
They're good. I like them. I like them. You know, God help me. A lot of people are like, those books are totally interminable. And there are some slow ones. There are some books that are 1,000 pages that really didn't need to be that long. But I like them. You know?
Yeah, I didn't get into them, but they're kind of on my list. So they're maybe someday.
Like, the epitome of, like, I have this incredibly grand vision. And, like, in books 2 through 4, I branch out, like, 900 different little subplots. And then I start having to weave them back together. Kind of like what happened with Lost, right? They're like, there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this. And then, like, you know, a bunch of it has to just get, like, written off, or you never even find out. And then they come back down to what's really important. So that's, it's fun reading the last three books because, like, stuff is happening, man. Like, shit is going. And that's always, that's
it's
always
funny you compare it to Lost because they both have a wheel of time. Lost has got the frozen donkey wheel of time, which is even more specific about its time wheeliness.
Where did the donkey in
Is it because donkeys actually pulled those types of wheels or something?
I think, yeah, the artifactness of its age seemed like it would be the kind that a donkey would pull. And it's funny. Donkey wheels are funnier than wheels.
Yeah, donkeys are the motive force behind all time travel.
Just,
I thought everybody knew that. So we talked about XCOM briefly. I brought it up,
and then you guys responded, as is our want.
So we were wondering whether or not it's on a grid. It is. I looked that up and found out.
Oh, okay.
But it's okay. Not. It's they.
It's not a visible grid like chess or something.
Right. They tried to make it non-obvious. So.
So they turned off grid like in Photoshop.
You do not see the grid when you're moving around. You basically see a range that you can walk through, but it is under the covers. It's a grid. System. So, whatever. Okay. Kind of interesting. One other non-gamey thing.
Except that was a gamey
Google,
thing.
Oh, that's right. That was a gamey thing. Google DSN Edit, Disney Edit. This guy went and, just as a test of his, like, he's a pro photographer, as a test of a new camera, he went and took 30,000 time-lapse photos at Disneyland. Just from all different parts of the park.
Wow.
And not like the kind of typical, like, oh, this is, you know, from a high shot above the entryway and you just see people coming in and going out. It's like really well composed and interesting artistic camera shots that would be good in single shots, but then there are just like a ton of them. So it's like a 5-minute time lapse video with 30,000 photos of people like walking around and doing stuff and like cool, well composed artistic shots of Disneyland. It's cool.
Cool. That does sound cool. You should put that like in the notes for the show so
if
we can
we had some way to like look at distribute it, links
like to the public
at the escort mission. Hey, you never did all the like stuff at the start of the show.
Yeah, I like delaying that by 5 minutes until we remember that we needed to do that. So go to theescortmission.com and click through our Amazon links when you buy stuff instead of just going to Amazon directly, because we get some change for that. Thanks.
And actually, and thank then, you, because lots of people have been doing that.
Yeah, totally. We're going to be able to pay for, like, one pop screen soon.
Sweet. No, no more of the plosives.
you know, interact with us on the social nets and email us questions so that we can have an email section.
Yeah.
We actually got one email this week, so we can have an email section this week.
Hells to the yeah.
All right.
But it's not email plural. It's email singular this week.
Resuming.
Right. Resuming. E3 is happening, and E3 has got some games that I'm kind of excited about, none of which are... Well, the only one, the one that I'm most excited about is probably Assassin's Creed 3, but we don't really have to talk about that. But one that, like, just seen a few, like, slivers and pieces of concept art is Star Wars 1313.
I just heard about that, I haven't seen any pictures, though. I just heard that it was, like, a mature third-person action-adventure or something.
Yeah, it sounds like... I didn't actually see if it was M-rated. Is it M-rated?
I don't know.
Okay. But yeah, so it's a mature, but not necessarily
M-rated. It's a bounty
M-rated.
Hunter. He kills people for money.
He's
That's
a bounty
mature.
Hunter. So they basically said, like, who's the coolest badass that everybody loves in Star Wars?
Jar Jar.
Like, Boba Fett.
Yep.
They're like, Jar Jar. you run around.
Can you imagine Jar Jar as, like, you know, a bounty hunter? That'd be kind of interesting. No one expect that to be good.
The whole game is based on a sub-level, level 1313 of the planet city Coruscant. So that's kind of a cool, that's where it gets his name.
It's like film noir.
Maybe. That'd be cool. Yeah, yeah. So That could be cool. I'm sort of, you know, potentially a little bit excited
optimistic.
About it. Yeah, cautiously optimistic. Perfect. And then the Space Quest guys, the Scott Murphy and Mark Crowe, popularly known by their fans as the two guys from Andromeda, who made like those four Space Quest games and then had a famous falling out.
They did.
Apparently are back, and they're back together, and they have a Kickstarter game. Woo! In light of the new like adventure games getting funded on Kickstarter trend. They're like, let's get in on that. So they're doing that. And that's cool because I really, really love those Space Quest games. Even though they were sort of frustrating in that you could fuck yourself by not getting, like, I didn't pick up the matchbook at the beginning and now I can't complete the game.
But that was kind of like, that's what those games were like back then, though. So it wasn't just them.
No. Because
were they like the worst offenders? Were they the worst offenders?
There were
that?
Some of the Sierra ones are famous.
Yeah, well, yeah. Because I never played the Space Quest ones, I only played the King's Quest. I didn't even play Police Quest. I always wanted to. But
well, Space Quest was funny. That's what I liked about it. Is it was humorous, right? So anyway, that'll be cool. I hope that's a good game. And I started playing Shadow of the Colossus. And
I didn't play any Space Quests, but
no,
I want to hear about Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus is good. They have fixed a lot.
That was
of
anticlimactic.
They have fixed a lot of the stuff.
Good.
So where I'm at. I have defeated three colossi at this point. So that's, I don't know, like 8% of the game or like 10% of the game or something like that.
It's a good taste. There's like 15.
Okay, yeah.
Or 16. It's an even number, I think.
Okay.
I don't remember.
So they have fixed, changed a lot of the stuff. The controls are much better than the controls in Eco, and they still have just like the very slight hint of they still do, you know, sort of camera movement, but it's not this like we want the camera shot to be here and then here and then here. It's more kind of moving around you as you move in a much more subtle way, and sort of it always recenters in kind of a, you know, rear three-quarter view, kind of cool look. But you do have direct control over the camera, which you don't in Eco, so that is cool. And that gives you so much. Somehow, when you, and I guess this makes a lot of sense. If you have control over the camera, then you can totally compensate for camera relative controls, and it all works fine. Because you're like, I'm moving the camera to the right. I know I'm going to have to counter steer to the left. It works perfectly. Like, easy, easy fix. Which is good.
It's an easy fix if you're an experienced or skilled enough gamer to handle two analogs. But it is kind of a barrier to entry for beginning gamers.
Agreed.
For non-gamers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does give you... The game's really pretty. And it's... that studio... Is there like one guy who's behind those games, Josh?
Yeah, basically.
Who's the guy?
Oh, his name escapes me. It's a Japanese name.
It's not... It's not Jinova Chen, is it? Is that a different guy? Is that guy?
I thought that was like Final Fantasy VII or something. Jinova? There was a Jinova in FF7.
A character?
There was a character named
Jinova. I'm not talking about a character.
There's actually
in another
a guy
game.
Named Jinova.
Wow. There's a guy called Jinova Chen, who's like one of those mature developer guys.
That might be him.
That's a good name.
Yeah, I don't know. No research.
You don't become a janitor if your name is Jinova.
Maybe not.
No.
No. Anyway, so whoever it is, they or that team. That guy are masters of setting and place.
No, Jinova Chen's the flower guy.
Oh, okay.
But they're also
but good at that. And Journey and such.
That game company. Guy.
Yeah. Okay. Continue.
So he's some other guy. They do setting and place really well. But my complaint this time is not about the controls and kind of the mechanics. Now it's about the story, and basically, at this point, and this very well may change, but my impressions to date are that I feel totally disconnected from the main character, and I feel sort of contemptuous of his goal. Like so as you start the game, you walk into this massive temple. You're carrying the body of your dead love, and you essentially enlist dark powers to bring her back to life, or so you hope. And, this sort of fairly obviously evil, voice and force instructs you to go kill, these massive demigods that roam this landscape. And I feel nothing but sympathy for the three giant creatures that I've had to to just fucking murder.
Oh,
like,
no.
And this total, like, this minuscule thing, and I climb up on the backs of them relatively easily. Like, there hasn't been much challenge so far, and I just fucking murder this, like, massive, majestic thing. I don't know. I don't feel bad for uncommon. The colossi.
I think that is a fairly common reaction.
It's totally like man's hubris.
That it feels weird. Like, you feel wrong going and killing these guys who are not attacking you.
At all.
They're, like, way the F over there doing their thing, and you just come up and murder them, and you're like... Well, I guess I have to do that because the game is essentially telling me to do it. Like, yeah. I can't just not do that.
So. Without any... So just from starting the game...
I think you need to beat the game, though.
And walking in, holding your dead love. I have no particular emotional connection. I, as the player, I'm supposed to feel one because the game tells me that my character does, but I really don't. And so far, I feel like... This is going to end badly. Like, I'm probably, you know, giving rise
but
to
you're
the
gonna
dark,
keep murdering
darkest
colossi,
of forces.
Right?
Yeah,
so you are. Uh-huh.
Let's go do it.
Yeah, you're basically, like, too smart or something, you know, without talking about the ending. I think it's intentionally supposed to be a little bit more subtle than that. I mean, it's supposed to be kind of apparent. You're supposed to have mixed feelings, mm-hmm. but they're supposed to be mixed feelings for now. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, as a gamer or as it being a game... the challenge and the you know, the actions, the gameplay yeah. are supposed to be fun enough and rewarding enough.
And
that,
they are.
That you want to go do this.
Yeah.
Right? You want to beat bosses, in quotes.
Yeah.
Right? Defeat enemies, in quotes. Right? But there is supposed to be that hint of, wait, I don't really trust the guy that I just made a deal with. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this whole mission seems a little misguided. Like, you know, he... I think it's a great opening scene, and I think that it does have the potential to give you some sympathy or empathy for the main character and the loss of this girl that
really
he's bringing with him.
Get that. I mean, there's no... There wasn't, like, a cutscene which told me why I was in love with this person or how she died or anything. Like... Just
or even your relationship
dead.
To her, right? Does he say in words a specific relationship
no,
to her?
No. He's just like you see him, you know, walking across the landscape, you know, with her on the horse, you know, toward the huge bridge that you walk across to enter the temple, and then the game starts.
But I felt like it was implied or
it's certainly implied, but it's
apparent
not,
enough.
Yeah.
You know, that it's almost he looks kind of like a Link-like figure, and mm-hmm. she's kind of like a Zelda-like figure. You know, these classic video game tropes of mm-hmm. saving the princess or something, or your love.
Yeah.
Except he's carrying her dead body on the back of his horse wrapped right. in a carpet or something. sorry. No, it's,
you
know,
mean a rug? I don't think you carry
it's
a carpet.
Not a rug.
He just went and got a carpet remnant at the...
Whatever, you know.
Sid's old-timey Japanese carpet warehouse.
Where you can also get rotten bread, but you can't get it because there's... No, all right. It's a callback, folks.
But yeah, he takes her to a temple and lays her down gently. And the
Zimbardo.
You know, the lighting and the camera angles and stuff are really artistic.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're supposed to feel for a little bit, but...
You know, what I think is interesting about it is that it really shows how much games have changed, because when you cracked open Super Mario Brothers for the first time, you didn't like stop to think like, well, okay, I don't identify with this short, squat Italian plumber, and what do I care if some dinosaur has taken a
He's
princess?
He's constantly murdering turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
your anthropomorphic
yeah,
mushrooms.
But did you care then when you were six and playing that? No. You care about that right. now because you've played so many games that have had a story
I've
and an emotional component.
I've also matured as
and
a
you've matured.
Individual,
right?
Right.
Well, and you question things more. Like, yeah. But I think you still wouldn't question the relationship between Mario and the princess.
Yeah, but Mario is not setting out to elicit those kind of reactions, where these games are designed to be that type of
right.
Of
well,
game.
Mario
You're
is about
to feel something.
It's about
you
gameplay. You're like, oh, yeah. I move right and I jump and I get to a flagpole, and that's my motivation, really. You know,
or yeah. you pick up Call of Duty and you expect to shoot some motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know why.
Right.
You just.
There's violence
ready,
in that game? What?
You're ready to shoot dudes, right? So, I mean, you see the cover art, and you know the concept of the game is defeating these giant bosses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're supposed to feel like, I'm going to go kick some giant's asses.
And that part is fun, and the art direction's amazing. Like,
right.
those monsters
so
are
So stop having
really
as much
cool.
of a heart until later.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying I'm not enjoying it for that reason. I'm just saying my emotional reaction as I play this game is like, I feel significant misgivings and I feel bad for the thing as I'm stabbing it over and over.
This is true, though. That is an undercurrent and it's, you know, going to proceed.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Totally. Freaking Shadow of the Colossus. Play some more of that. All right, Mike. Did you play any more Dark Souls? Because that's also one of my favorite games ever. You need to fucking play.
Right. So I'm not sure if I mentioned it last. Oh, yeah. I mentioned it last week, I think, that I was getting it, but that I hadn't played it yet. So I've had it.
Yeah, I know last week you talked about going up into the first boss, didn't you?
Oh, did I?
Did he say that last week, Charles?
Yes. No, you talked about getting past the
oh, okay.
The tutorial, right. The tutorial
right.
boss.
Okay. Yeah. So, and getting all the way up to the first boss.
So I haven't played much more. I played a little bit more after the last podcast, and I still have not gotten past that level. I did attempt the boss several more times. I actually was, you know, how I mentioned that the combat was so much fun that even though it was repetitive, I still wanted to do it. Well, that patience kind of wore thin, and so my new strategy is to run past every enemy to the boss, which is very doable, actually. So you don't actually have to fight any of them. I basically ran past all 30 enemies right to the boss fight because the thing that was annoying me was not fighting those guys. It was beating the boss. Uh-huh. And the 5 minutes it took to kind of wade my way through them was 5 minutes that I wasn't working on beating the boss. So I started doing that. Still couldn't beat the boss. I probably tried the boss like another, I don't know, 10 times. And basically did even worse than when Josh and I played together that one time.
Yeah, your very first try was, you got him to lower than 50%.
That was my best attempt.
You were doing very well.
I only did worse after that. I couldn't match that performance since that time. I basically tried to roll, and I would mistime it, and he would hit me, and I would be dazed, and then he would get another hit on me, and I would die. Yeah. And that happened a lot. Or I would try to go up to the tower behind you, and he would follow me, and I'd try to do roughly the same strategy, and I would mistime it again, and he would kill me. And so, that just kind of got old, so I had to put the game down, because I knew I was reaching my limit on the fun is draining, and the frustration is going up, and I didn't want to ruin the game mm-hmm. for me, so I stopped, and I haven't played it since.
So, the basic question of can you shield block one of his attacks? Did you identify that?
And it takes your stamina all the way down. And I think it might also, I'm not sure if it dazed me or not. I think it probably depended on what I put into my stats. Like I needed to play around with that a little bit more to maximize my stamina.
Okay.
But
it didn't do health damage.
It didn't do health damage, but I think it took all of my stamina away. Yeah.
Right.
So that was bad because then I don't think I could move or roll or anything. I couldn't roll. I could run. I couldn't even run because you need stamina to run. So if I blocked, I could not run. I could not roll. I was basically a sitting duck. So that was not really useful. The only way to really beat him, it seemed, was to dodge, attack, attack, dodge, attack, attack.
So the game is an exercise in self-control
mm-hmm.
And dealing with frustration. Absolutely, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating, and you can be tempted to, for example, run right by guys, right? And although that in that particular case you can do that, and that's probably a good tactic, basically, to get to the boss more quickly, you can run by all those dudes. Running by all those dudes is kind of getting you out of the mindset of the game, out of the proper tactical scenario you need to be in to defeat that boss. You know what I mean?
Deliberate procedural.
Yeah, you need to be in deliberate procedural, murdering dudes carefully without taking any damage, like mode, in order to beat most of the bosses.
I get that.
So, you know, it's kind of like when we played the Batman Arkham City demo,
mm-hmm.
and it's the complete opposite.
Right.
The combat is you're surrounded
it's basically
by
button mashing,
a dozen
which works.
Guys, and you press A, and you defeat them all very easily and quickly.
Right.
It's complete opposite. And then as soon as you went back to Dark Souls, you're like, geez, I'm really impatient for this now because even one little skeleton, you know, is damaging me and is difficult. So it's very different, and you know,
very, yeah.
I understand the stress.
It's a mindset. You have to be in the mindset to want to do that, and yeah. I was running out of that mindset, so I knew I needed to stop.
Do you? Can I ask a question? Do you level up and get more powerful as you play through the game?
Yes, you do. Yeah, so you get souls, and you can go back and level up or whatever.
Is running past all those dudes leaving you underpowered for the boss?
To some extent, yes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I asked Josh if he did a lot of grinding. Uh-huh. If he just, you know, leveled up in an area before going to the boss, and he said he almost never did that. So my strategy is not really to do that. My strategy is to fight all the enemies up to a boss and not die, and that would be my playthrough.
So what I said or what I did shouldn't necessarily be what you do, or you know,
right.
If you need to grind on some to level up a few, do that. I mean, if it only takes you 10 minutes, 15 minutes to clear like a bunch of those guys, get some souls, and then go spend the points, and you level up like 4 times, I wouldn't consider that grinding. I would consider that like obviously just making yourself a little stronger and being necessary. I would consider grinding like repeating the same section over the course of an hour or something like that, repeatedly spending the points one by one, leveling up once and then one more time, and then one more time. You know, at the very, very low levels, you know, you can level up 5 or 6 times so quickly that you absolutely should. Mm-hmm. And you should put more points into stamina so that you can block more. But that point that you're at where you can block one of his attacks and take no health damage, that's a good point to be at. That means you can defeat him with that tactic. But the answer, you know, although you can't sprint or immediately then block another or roll immediately when your stamina is low, you know, you can hold your shield down immediately after and regen that stamina very, very quickly.
I think he actually dazes me too. Like, because he takes all my stamina away. So I'm like,
You need a tiny bit more stamina. Right. You need to wear a tiny bit heavier armor so you have a little higher poise. Right. You know, put your armor back on and be less agile if you're going to use that tactic.
Right.
Remember how I said, how you notice that when you take armor off, you're faster, right? If you put all that armor back on, you have higher poise and you won't get staggered as much.
Right.
So if you're going to use that tactic of blocking, wear all your heaviest armor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of just running and trying him 10 times in a row real quick, you know, like typical games, you really have to approach it differently. Or literally, even because it is one of the earlier ones, just go on YouTube and see other people's tactics and, you know, see how other people approach the game.
Right.
You don't have to do, you know.
Although it does, that, I can't help but feel like that is cheating.
Yeah, but is it better or worse to do that to that boss and then continue and enjoy the rest of the game, or to just say fuck the game and give up and never pick it up?
Well, I didn't say that.
But you said you were close to that point. You said you were likely never going to beat it.
No. Well, yeah. Well, okay, but I mean, yeah, I'm spending a lot of time on, like, basically what is the first section of the game, which I don't think I've ever spent that much time on the first section of any game ever. So, yeah, it is difficult, and I'm just saying at that time, I knew that if I didn't stop playing, I would push myself past the point where I would be like, fuck this game. And I didn't want to ruin it, because I do want to get into it more, but I realized that I was not doing well, I was getting worse. It was time to take a break, and I just haven't gone back.
Breaks are good, but I encourage you to return.
Yeah. But I can tell it's one of those games where you have to be on, and you have to pay attention, and there is little to no relaxation in it at all. Like, it's like boot camp for gaming. Like, I came away from it thinking, man, I am soft. Like, I am not a good, like, precise, fast game player anymore. I like games that let me kind of fucking sit and take shit in and be like, all right, what am I gonna do next? And Dark Souls is the exact opposite of that type of game. It is everything that I'm not good at anymore, and it's just gonna take some time, and I'm not going to blast through it. I'm not gonna spend 12 hours straight playing it. I'll spend an hour playing it and either make it past that boss or fail again, and then have to take a break, and then I'll come back later and try a different tactic or something. And
so, yeah, relaxing is a word that it isn't, so it might not be for everybody.
It's possible it's not going to be my best game ever. Okay, so what have I been doing? So some music news. game news with music news. The newest indie Humble Indie bundle's out, number 5, which is arguably one of the best ones
ever. It's absurd.
It's amazing.
It's ridiculous. It's really how ridiculous. Every game in it is amazing. Now, the only problem is, this is the double-edged sword, is that because they're so good and everybody's already heard of them, I would say most people have already played them.
Bought and played most
of them. And I think I have either bought and or played and or beaten all of these games.
Yeah.
Except I haven't Psychonauts.
I played a little Psychonauts, haven't beat it. I played a little Amnesia, haven't beat it. I played a good portion of Sword and Sorcery, and I've beat both Limbo and Bastion. But people out there, support these developers. Even if you play them before, you get the soundtracks too. So it's even worth it just to give them, $5 or whatever to get the soundtracks.
Yeah, buy it and give it as a gift.
Or a gift
to someone
it, yes.
who hasn't played these amazing games.
So those are all amazing games. You should play them. So there's also an indie game music bundle, which is soundtracks from lesser known games. The third one is out now. I bought the very first one. So you can get the soundtrack to Terraria, Plants vs. Zombies, Dust Force, which is amazing, Elo Milo, and Frozen Synapse, which is also good. I have that soundtrack.
Elo Milo's soundtrack's really good.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all good. And if you pay, I think, more than $10, you get another five soundtracks free. These deals are insane. It's amazing.
The thing that they do that's really, really smart from the Humble Indie Bundle is the mechanic that they have
for distributing your money.
That is really smart.
Yeah, that's
but the gamey mechanic of paying more than the average to get something extra.
Yeah.
That's an amazingly intelligent, just from a marketing standpoint, that's real smart.
Yeah, and so, it works well. I think these do really well.
So you get all those games except Bastion, and you get Bastion if you pay more than whatever the average is at the time that you bought it. So if you're in early, then the average might be quite low, and you can get, you get all 5 games for, whatever, less than $8 or something. But later on, once the average has been driven up, $10, $12, then you pay more than that, and it just causes the whole everybody to be paying more than the last person. It's just so smart.
Yes. So yes, it's a smart mechanism, but do you know about Indie Royale's money mechanism?
How's that work?
They released one this week, and it was mostly games I hadn't heard of. I need to look into it more thoroughly. I'll probably get it too. But the way they work is you can you can't name your price as low as you want. You have to pay at least the minimum price.
Mm-hmm.
And the minimum price is typically around $4 or $5.
Mm-hmm. The horror.
And then, I know, for 5 games, right?
It's insane.
And then if you donate a lot more, it lowers the price for everyone else.
Oh.
It lowers the minimum price. So it's if you donate 10, it might lower the average 1 cent or 15 or something like that.
Interesting.
But if you donate $100 or $1,000, it lowers the price for everyone else by a quarter or 50 cents or something significant.
You see Notch paid $3,000 for the most recent Humble Bundle.
And then Humble Brony.
Yeah.
Went up 1 cent or something.
Somebody Humble Brony's at $5,000 for it. But there is somebody who did 1 cent more.
Yeah.
That's well, no, it was Humble Brony that was at, three?
Was it 3,000 a penny? And then Notch
did 3,000 a penny.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Humble Brony did 3,002 and then went up to just 5,000.
Right. Yeah. So Notch, for those who don't know, is the developer behind Minecraft.
That little gap in between area? No, okay.
And frankly, based on the success of Minecraft, he could spend a lot more than $3,000.
Yeah, because that guy is
OMG.
Literally clothed in dollar bills.
I can't believe I bought that game for $8.
Oh, God.
And now it's $20 on XBLA.
I know.
And
selling like crazy. Actually, Josh and I, we played the demo for multiplayer.
It's fun, too.
Minecraft on the Xbox.
They have all kinds of castles.
It's super polished
and
now with the tutorial and towns. And
all kinds of shit pre-built now.
It works pretty well, actually. So to completely counterbalance the video game music bundle, I also picked up an album on iTunes, which you may not think that I would ever be into, but you're probably both aware of that super crazy popular song, Somebody That I Used to Know by Gautier. Right.
Yeah.
So the female vocalist on that track is named Kimbra, and I think they're both Australian. So she just came out with her new album, and that's a good song. I like that song. I like her part. And for some reason, I wanted to buy the album, and I bought it on day one. It's very random. I don't ever do that.
Nice.
So her album called Vows is out, and I mainly got interested in it because I heard her in that song, and I went to go look her up on YouTube, and one of her top singles on YouTube is called Settle Down, which I may have linked you guys at some point, which is a very unique, interesting video. You know, her vocals are pretty awesome. It's a very catchy song, and the rest of the album is pretty good too. So if you want some nice, polished studio pop female vocal music, good stuff.
Come to the dark side, Mike. Kesha. Kesha. I know. It's right around the corner, right? She calls you. I fucking love that Kesha song.
The thing is that Kimbra is so
like... What's the new Kesha song?
I don't know the new one.
Oh, you're still talking about that old
I'm still Kesha talking song. About the TikTok? Brush my teeth with... Yeah, TikTok. God damn, I love that song.
See, the thing about Kimbra, though, is that she's totally the like sophisticated like dinner party...
Tell yourself whatever you want.
Whereas
you
Kesha is the like, let's brush my teeth with whiskey and wear lots of glitter. And I don't know. I can't get with that. That's weird.
I'm going to have to go with Charles on this one.
Like, listen to the album first and then tell me which one you like.
If you dabble in pop, it's, you know, like you can feel free to admit that you like Kesha sometimes too.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
No, so I did listen to that song that you linked, the Kimbra song, and it was good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It's good. Okay, so games that I've played. I haven't played a lot of new games. The one new game that I did try is still like a developer preview. I think I saw it linked on Rock Paper Shotgun, which is a great video gaming blog.
That sucks.
Right. Called Against the Wall.
Huh. It's sort of an older game, right?
Well, you may have seen it linked a couple months ago, and it has been updated to have new stuff. And it's still like, you know, 0.6 version or something like that. So it's really interesting, but I'm not sure it has enough to really win me over. But I played through a part of the developer preview. But basically, you start out on a ledge and you're right next to a wall, and the wall apparently seems infinite both in vertically and horizontally. And the only interaction you have, you can jump, and you have like a wand that lets you, like, the wall is made up of 3D rectangular blocks, and if you tap it, it pulls it out slowly, and if you tap it again, it goes back in. And they're of different sizes. You can only jump up like 2 grid units, and some of them are 3 or 4, or they're only 1. And if you look straight up, there's like some kind of building, and you're like, okay, well, that's the only structure that looks like is significant, so I'm gonna go up there. So you start pulling blocks out, and you eventually figure out how to get up there, and I then couldn't get up to the next part of it, but if you look further up the wall, there's even more stuff. And there's no story, there's no intro, there's really no explanation except for the mechanics. So it's one of those, it's very much of an art kind of piece where it's not a typical game, even though it has typical game mechanics. And I don't really know why you're there, who you are, what the point of any of it is, but I just thought it was an interesting mechanic, and I've never really seen a strictly just like almost rock climbing game.
Cool.
When you think about it. But so that's something to look forward to when that gets done. I don't forget who made it or anything like that. Otherwise, I've really been kind of doing some retro gaming lately. I mentioned that I played StarCraft II, the starter edition, played a couple levels.
Retro gaming?
No, sorry. That immediately made me think of Command & Conquer, which is my more favorite real-time strategy game. So I reinstalled the first decade, which is basically like Command & Conquer 1, Red Alert, Red Alert 2, Generals, even Commando, which was like the FPS set in the Command & Conquer world. I'm pretty much loving that. I don't know why, but I really have like a thing for that over the Warcraft real-time strategy and even the StarCraft real-time strategy games.
You should play Company of Heroes, because that is kind of the evolution of that branch of the RTS pathway.
Is that still the same style of gaming?
It is an RTS like that, but it is... They basically streamlined out a lot of the kind of resource management stuff and it's much more focused on the tactical unit control.
I don't know. I kind of like the resource management. I think that's...
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's kind of part of the strategy.
But not enough to want to do the full-on StarCraft style.
Well, what do you mean by full-on StarCraft style? What about Command & Conquer is not full-on?
What I thought you were getting at is that you don't like the kind of finicky nature of the StarCraft, like having to do all that micromanagement.
No. That's the thing. There's nothing mechanically about StarCraft and Warcraft that I don't like. For some reason, I just want to play the Command & Conquer skin or something.
Okay.
You know, the...
I got you.
The kind of units, the environment where you are, the hokey videos, the... the sound, the music. I don't know, everything about those games.
You have just like a nostalgic connection to that game too.
I really do.
You really like really it this
do.
Day.
Does so. Anybody really skin remod for StarCraft 2?
I mean,
it's totally moddable,
there
right?
are a bunch of mods, but there aren't like full-on reskins, no. Like yeah. the closest that came was like Dota in Warcraft. Yeah. Blizzard has always kind of let people do that, and that was like a completely different game. There are some cool mods that let you... Basically, you can... So anytime you play a game, you get a replay file, like a StarCraft game. You get a replay file, and there are a bunch of mods that let you load those replay files and then watch the battle as if it were like a third-person shooter. So like an over-the-shoulder view from one Marine... it playing out like the whole game, and if you get with a unit and you like play a game where you keep that one unit alive, then they see like this incredible thing, and watching it from like the level of this tiny dude, when you actually see like a Protoss mothership floating up in the sky and cloaking units, it actually looks surprisingly epic and amazing.
That's so rad. Will you send us a YouTube of a good example of that?
Yeah, I'll find one.
And that's basically what Commando was supposed to be. Command and Conquer Commando is that it puts you in the shoes of an FPS of like the commando unit in Command and Conquer, which basically has like the one shot kill sniper rifle and the ability to like C4 blow up buildings. And yeah, you see like the structures, like the Hand of Nod, which is sort of like the barracks, and the obelisk, which has the laser shooting thing. And you see that as if, you know, in a first person. Yeah. And that was really cool when that first came out, because I really thought, oh man, that'd be awesome. It was kind of a hokey FPS. It definitely was not one of the better ones, and it doesn't really hold up too well even now. But once again, yeah, I think I have a strong nostalgic hold for that game. That
there was
you guys probably game. Would hate them, and I love them.
There was a game, SimCopter. Do you remember that? It was a similar thing.
Yeah, I never played that.
You could build a
you could
Sim
fly around
city,
in your SimCity.
A yeah. SimCity city, like SimCity 2 or 3000 or something, and then fly a helicopter around inside yeah. it. That's kind of cool.
I will not fault you for playing those old Command & Conquer games.
Well, good.
Although I might be tempted
I'm not asking for
because
for
basically StarCraft 2 and Diablo 3 are basically retro gaming. Like, those yeah. games are so old.
Yeah.
Mechanically, they just have some new polish and some new, you know, fixes to old problems.
Right.
But, I mean, Diablo 2 is like, the graphics are almost arbitrary. They look okay.
You could just be like on a farm yeah. and gardening, right?
I mean, Diablo 3. Most people that I know, immediately upon first boot up of Diablo 3, went in and checked every box for show everything. Right, advanced everything, numbers, everything, and then you play the game just looking at really the numbers popping up over everybody's head for mm-hmm. how much damage you're doing. And I even use those numbers that are popping up to identify where enemies are, because it's
more
kinda,
than their actual
more than
graphic.
More than their graphic, because yeah. it's kind of hard to see where all the enemies are except for the damage numbers above their head.
But the from bright my... yellow damage number is really obvious.
Right, yeah. right. And so I tried turning them all off because I saw YouTube where a Diablo 3 clip looked amazing, you know, uh-huh. some barbarian just whacking stuff. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's not the game I'm playing. So I tried turning all my numbers off so that I could try to play that game. It just becomes very, very difficult. It's a very different game. I mean, I literally couldn't tell where enemies were or when I was hitting them or not. Mm-hmm. You try to pay attention to the graphics to do that, but it's hard to see when there's just so much chaos on the screen, especially with 4-player co-op. Oh, there's so much chaos.
Yeah.
You just want to, you know, get through it quickly and turn on all the numbers.
It's interesting you mentioned that it's it sort of feels like those games are being held back a little bit. In Diablo, I mean, they're very deliberate, but interestingly, just on the StarCraft side, StarCraft 2 introduced a couple fairly minor mechanical changes, and in my view, StarCraft is being held back essentially by the pro community, because they are very adamant that they don't want the game to get easier, right? And a lot of people feel that mechanically, or in terms of the skill at the top tier, StarCraft II is sort of almost like a joke. Like, there are a couple, like, pretty minor things that seem like obvious enhancements or improvements to the you know, fun time havings of the players. But the pros are like, that's bullshit, and that is totally ruining our game. Like, for example, in StarCraft 1 and in Brood War, you could not like multi-select more than like 8 units at a time.
Whereas in Command & Conquer 1, you can add as many as you want to a group.
And in StarCraft 2, you can add as many as you want, yeah. and you can select a whole army of like millions of units, and it gives you like a little tabbed interface at the bottom with like, okay, here's the first 24, and page 2 is the next 24. So if you were selecting a bunch of units, you would like box 30 units, and you'd select 8 of them and send them to do something. And then so the APM had to be that much higher. You had to be that much better. You couldn't like auto collect resources, right? You couldn't like
right, but
rally
points. Those are examples of things they fixed for StarCraft 2. What are the examples of StarCraft 2 things that are still around that they won't fix?
What I'm saying is that it's interesting that the pros kind of view those things not as enhancements, but as detractions, right?
Oh, that's the going opinion in StarCraft 2?
So being able to...
Pros, there's actually a number of pros, and actually the Brood War pro scene is still larger than the StarCraft 2 pro scene.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Because it's considered to be the like the thinking man's StarCraft. Like you have to be a better gamer. And they are just starting to have like they just announced that like SK Telecom or something like that. There's like this one major pro Brood War team that has a bunch of like Flash and JDong, these like really, really super top tier, like very high win
J-Dong.
Rate. JDong. JAEDONG. Yeah. top pros, they just announced that they have been practicing StarCraft 2, meaning that they probably will be showing up at tournaments soon. So
wow. Yeah.
So I just want to mention one other retro game that I started playing we can just talk about for a little bit. Completely different genre. Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
So I didn't own a Genesis. I didn't really play these games much. So I tried my hand at like the first one. And
Where'd you try it?
You know, from the Genesis that I obviously keep in the closet that I rehooked up.
where else would I play discussion. It?
So the one thing that I noticed, the one thing that always bothered me about those games, like, I mean, I think in general, they're lauded as classics, kind of on the same shelf as like Super Mario Brothers or something. At least the first couple.
Most people put them like a tier below.
Right, but they're up there. Like they're looked at as successful. They were successful, popular games.
Yeah.
So the thing that always bothered me about that, you know how their advertisements always used to say that the Genesis had blast processing,
right?
Which was not a real thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the CPU was actually faster than the Super Nintendo, but I don't think it was enough
to. Not than the Super Nintendo.
I think the Super Nintendo was actually like a few clock cycles slower than the Genesis. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, the thing about Sonic the Hedgehog, what I want to do every time I play a level in Sonic the Hedgehog is go as fast as fucking possible and jump through the level. Like, I don't want to meticulously go through and try to find all the items and, you know, carefully defeat enemies. I want to, like, you know, press down, hit the button to, like, charge it up, which is not in the first one, by the way, and freaking peel out, because that's freaking fun as hell. But, you kind of like miss like 90% of the level, and I'm like, why is all this level here? So I was like, why? And the problem with going so fast is that it's hard to control, and you run into enemies some of the times, and you die. And I think that's what usually happened, is that I tried to flash my way through the level, and I would invariably die at some point, and then I would give up, and I never really went back to it. So I never made it past like maybe like the third or fourth world of that game. But now playing it, I still do that, and I actually made it, you know, like this, at the third or fourth world, and it's fun. It's a fun game. I don't know if I would put it above Super Mario Brothers in terms of like classic platformers.
It depends on which one you're talking about. Like Mario 3 and Super Mario World are two of the best games ever made.
Right.
And Sonic is not better than either of those.
Right. But if you compare it to like Super Mario Brothers 1, is it better?
That's one you can make a much.
It really depends on the metric.
Yeah.
But I think
in terms of amount of fun you can have, I would say it's definitely on par.
I think the pacing of a Super Mario Brothers game is much better than a Sonic game. I think the speed is such this double-edged sword, mm-hmm. that it's so hard not to do what I do, even though I think, you know, there are parts of the level that kind of like require you not to do that if you want to ever see them, or you know, because there's multiple ways to get through a level, and I don't know, it's just that whole mechanic is weird. I never really got behind that as like, this should be the standard, that, you know, platformer should be fast and like a racing game, which is what they kind of feel like. Except your foot is stuck on the accelerator and you're always going 150 miles an hour. But anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know, did you guys ever actually play them?
Oh yeah, I played a lot. I had a Genesis.
Did you like them?
And
did you beat them?
Super Nintendo. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
To me, the pacing of Sonic is kind of like Trials. Like, I don't like it. It does not click with me. It's a game.
Don't like it.
It's a game.
It's like Trials in that you don't like it.
No, it's very, very similar. I'm going to say how. It's a game where you want to go fast, and there's these impediments that stop you, your progress. And to me, every time you stop, even briefly, in Sonic, it feels like a failure. And it's like, I don't want to, you know, I want to go fast. Stop stopping me. I made a mistake. You know, I need to do a more perfect run or something.
So I
think and it's, in you know, Trials, right.
It's like I want it to be like Tony Hawk. I want it to be one long string of tricks for one stupendously awesome score. And anytime I miss a jump, it ruins the whole thing.
If you end your combo in Tony Hawk, it's over. You need to manual into the next combo. You know,
right?
Yeah. And in Trials, it's like, yeah, I want to get to the end. And if I can't get over a barrel, it is so frustrating.
I get it.
I want to play Trials like Forza.
You want to play a motocross game.
I continue going around the track.
You want to play a motocross game, not a Trials game. Right? That's the difference, right? Like, most people in the U.S. aren't aware of the sport called motorcycle trials, which is like playing a stop-start, like, incredibly difficult obstacle trials level. Like, it's a pretty good approximation of what that must be like, you know, and we watch some videos and you have a sense now of what that is. But if people just come to it and say like, oh, there's a cool motocross game, you will be super pissed when you play that. And it's not for you. It's even worse in this one now that they have those in Trials Evolution, now that they have the motocross multiplayer levels, because they are like that. They are like super easy to do and flowing, and it's much more about keeping a flow and a pace rather than like what are the exact, you know, combination of control inputs I need to do to get over this particular obstacle. Yeah.
All right, I'm good.
Cool.
Talking to you guys.
All right, I've got game stuff and non-game stuff. I guess I'll do non first.
So brave.
I watched Religious this week.
That's a good movie. I like that.
I have not seen
that. Did you like it?
But I've heard Robin's parents really want us to see it because they loved it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's
on. They hate God.
It's on.
I liked it because it's sort of funny, and Bill Maher's kind of funny, right? He's like an asshole who you love to hate. You know, he's sort of a jerk, but I thought it was a, you know,
but at least
cool,
he's a jerk on your side.
Like a good documentary will always get me. It could be on basically any subject. Right?
Could it be on how much you suck? If it's really well done.
Yeah. If HBO, what? NFL films. If fucking NFL. Like, I have no interest in boxing or football, right? But I will watch Hard Knocks and 24/7 on HBO anytime they put out. I'm like, Cincinnati Bengals, Hard Knocks. I will watch the whole fucking thing because that show is so well shot. And, like, it's such good documentary filmmaking. I have no interest in football, but, I love that show.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, I recommend it enough to watch it. It's on Netflix, and it's free, so you should watch it.
Well, if you have a Netflix account, which is not free.
Yeah, which everyone should.
Yeah, everybody does.
So, Bill Maher, I think he's kind of a dick. He's kind of annoying, and he's not super funny. He's occasionally kind of funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's my hesitation to watch this movie for a couple of years or whatever. But so I watched it and I got stuck in the middle when he, you know, had one random fact on the screen that it didn't seem like a fact to me. So I had to stop the movie and look it up, and it seemed basically untrue. And so then
what was it?
It kind of irritated me. He compares the ancient Egyptian god Horus to Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm,
and says that Horus was born of a virgin on the 25th of December and resurrected Lazarus.
I remember that section. He's demonstrating, ostensibly demonstrating Jesus similarities to previous deities.
I think
it's not a unique.
I think on Wikipedia deity. The article is something like the mythological
origins
correlations of Jesus or something like that. And specifically for Horus, like some of those quote facts that were on the screen don't seem universally accepted by Egyptologists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Egyptologists is like this whole thing I was not going to get into, like how many of them agree on this stuff, but it seemed like it was not a consensus those facts that he put on the screen. And I only like facts on the screen that are consensuses of experts in that field. So that kind of pissed me off. And then it made me question more of the other facts that I didn't think were facts in the film. It was funny, though, at times. And he makes a lot of good points. But in general, I have a problem with people that make arguments, even when I agree with the argument. If they make the argument using, you know, misleading specious facts logic. Or, you know, fallacies, et cetera, it's like, well, if you couldn't make the argument well enough, honestly, then, you know, do you really have a good point in the first place? You're doing a disservice almost.
Did you guys watch the Jimmy Kimmel White House press correspondence dinner?
Just clips, just quotes.
He had a joke about Bill Maher where he said, you guys know what the difference between Rush Limbaugh and Bill Maher's fans are? Bill Maher's fans know he's an asshole.
Right? So. That's true. Yeah. I mean, I would compare him almost directly to Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh, somebody like that. It's just, I think you're right. Most people do know he's an asshole. It's
like, that guy's an asshole. And most fans of Rush Limbaugh are like, Rush is the best.
Yeah. You know? Or Bill O'Reilly. And they're like, no, he's moderate.
Yeah. For a long time, Bill Maher was the, Bill O'Reilly was the most moderate person on
Fox News.
Literally the most left on Fox News.
Was that until Glenn Beck showed up or something?
I think it was like if you didn't count who's the straw man that they put up against Hannity and Combs. Sean Combs. If you didn't count Sean Combs, O'Reilly was the next guy.
Anyway, so Religious kind of sent me down the rabbit hole. Then I had to I watched the next thing on Netflix that it recommended or whatever, which was The God Who Wasn't There, this other documentary.
I think that's in my queue. Sounds familiar.
Even lower budget and, you know, less well executed and more fallacious arguments and stuff, but still a few interesting points. The one, you know, really interesting takeaway from that you know you could get in a bullet instead of watching the film is that all four of the Gospels were written in like 70 AD, and Jesus died in like 30 AD, and so for that 40 years.
Wait, how can he die 30 years after he died?
He was born in zero. Born in 33
ish.
Ah, okay,
yeah,
ish estimates, right?
Yeah.
So for about 40 years, nobody wrote.
Wait, like but about, I thought zero AD was the death.
That's the birth.
Birth.
But then how is it after? What is it after then? Exactly
after his birth.
Oh,
sorry. I thought
Anno Domini.
I thought it was after death.
It's his birth. Sorry, bro. Yeah, okay. Anyway, 30 to
cool
70.
Story, bro.
So for 40 years, no one was writing like about Jesus and taking that around and starting Christianity, right?
Yeah.
Paul did start the church, right? Started Christianity in that 40 years. And he has writings. And in his writings, he apparently like never wrote specifically about Jesus. He somehow started Christianity and wasn't aware that Jesus had just lived and died and resurrected. Right? So I need to look more into that. I didn't really know that. And so I need to find out how much of that's true. That's like the one interesting point I need to research from that movie. Well, you don't have to watch the rest of that thing.
Similar to that, there was, you know, a point is that the something council or like the Vatican council or something. There was a point in, I don't know, like 1500 or something where the church leaders all got together in Spain and decided what was going to be canonical to the Bible and what wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so there's a bunch of Apocrypha that has been part of the Bible and then hasn't. And, you know, but ostensibly the Bible is, you know, the divinely inspired word of God, you know, directly translated, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Right, it's a rabbit hole. Anyway, yes. The next thing I had to do was start reading The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, which has been on my list for a while, a 2006 preeminent atheist handbook sort of thing. And I only got to chapter two in that before I got to something he said that, you know, vaguely may or may not have denigrated the feminist movement. I wasn't sure. And so I had to, you know, look up whether Richard Dawkins was a misogynist douchebag before I continued, right? Because you know, I was with him until that point to some extent.
So does that make his opinion on atheism like invalidated just because he might hate women?
Well, whenever I read anything,
it might make you feel bad.
Whenever I read opinions about anything, mm-hmm. I like to know a little bit about the person saying it, especially when they're presenting research or stating facts or opinions I want to take mm-hmm. with a grain of seriously. Mm-hmm. And I was taking his opinion seriously, and he seems like an upright guy up until that point. And yes, I think if someone's a misogynist douchebag, I'm going to take their opinion about anything less seriously.
Okay.
It's interesting, because that doesn't necessarily follow logically.
That's definitely...
I guess you're right.
That's an emotional reaction, not really a logical reaction.
That is
reaction.
A specific fallacy. It's.
I could say 2 + 2 = 4, and also say women suck. Do you now not believe that 2 + 2 = 4 if you didn't know that already?
I'm not gonna not believe that. I mean, I could still continue reading the book, and I could still... you know, consider what he has to say.
Right.
But I'm not going to be able to...
It's the fallacy of the hypocrite, I believe, is a term for it. Just because somebody doesn't follow their own advice doesn't mean that their advice is wrong. Right. So just because That's somebody true. Holds a wrong opinion doesn't mean all their opinions are wrong. Or
That's
all
true.
Their,
I, well, I didn't say all yeah. his opinions would be wrong and that I would disagree with them from that point.
You're just
I
more just, skeptical
I just
now.
Really wanted to know.
Yeah. So is he?
So what did
would
you find?
Yeah. Would you not want to know?
Yeah, I want to know. So is he?
All right. So I googled Richard Dawkins on feminism.
Did you talk to him and ask him? You know,
no.
from the great. Is he
no.
still alive?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know alive. If you guys have ever gone down this rabbit hole, but yeah. I should have predicted what I was going to find because I've gone down the rabbit hole a few times in the past for random preeminent men that are experts on anything. Mm-hmm. If you're curious about whether or not they're misogynist. You know, whether or not they're a feminist or whatever, and you go Google that, you might find...
You're going to have a bad time?
Yeah. Yeah, that South Park meme. Uh-huh.
It works.
Yeah.
All right.
Because they're...
I'm sorry, I just summarized your whole point.
Yeah, you did.
Are we going to hate Richard Dawkins now? Is that what you're going
to
do to us?
No. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying there are a lot of feminist bloggers mm-hmm. that, you know, and I've seen this multiple times when I've dug into stuff, that when I've, you know, looked into someone specific or some specific controversy, that there are just these arguments that have gone back and forth between lots of different blog posts and comments on blogs. And you dig yourself into a rabbit hole of reading all these different blogs and comments where a small misunderstanding or disagreement becomes overblown into, like, you know, this person is a misogynist.
Their ethos.
And this permanent person is a, quote, like, feminazi or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just devolve into polarized arguments. Right. And in general, for serious discussion, although on this show, you know, we're a big fan of hyperbole and
are we?
Okay. And polarizing opinions. But for a serious discussion of, you know, legitimate topics, the most interesting discussion really happens with nuance in the middle ground in general. Right. And polarized opinions.
I agree with that a little bit.
You can.
I feel neutral about it.
You literally had me for a second, and I was about to yell at you.
Wow, he's got the face. He's got the straight face. You know, he's got the poker face.
Anyway,
pup. Sorry.
Right, polar.
Damn it, it's already happening.
Yeah, Lady Gaga's next, Mike.
It was Christopher Walken's reading. That's what got me.
Poker face. Poker face.
All right, so I don't have to get into super detail.
We're ruining the seriousness of this discussion you're trying to have. I'm sorry.
Unless you found this really interesting, I don't have to dig
into fascinated.
Detail.
Well, is he a douche?
So
just
I'll
say yes
you,
or no.
Well, I'm telling you that it's a nuanced thing. It's not a polarized, like, feminazi versus misogynist
I want a
thing.
Sound bite.
No, literally, my whole point is that, like, there is too much misogynist versus feminazi, like, discussion on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to have a legitimate, nuanced discussion.
Yeah.
So, what happened was, in mid-2011, this atheist blogger named Rebecca Watson of this blog called Skeptic.
Yes.
Went to...
I've listened to some episodes of that podcast.
Oh, have you?
Which
have.
Sucks.
Okay.
All other podcasts suck.
Especially Giant Bomb.
So she went to some conference. I forgot what country.
Jeff Gerstmann is a feminazi.
That's no middle ground. That's the truth.
I forgot what country, but she spoke on a panel or something at some atheism conference with Richard Dawkins, actually. And then that, you know, that night on her way to her hotel room, there was a gentleman in an elevator with her who, as the quote is, as polite as you could possibly imagine.
Show me your tits, please.
For a guy to proposition her. Right. Wow, even the word proposition is, you know, a little harsh. He basically said, I find you very interesting. You know, he's probably attending the same conference mm-hmm. as her. I find you very interesting. I would like to have further discussion. He actually said, even in more politely, like, don't take this the wrong way. You know, I'm really sorry, but I find you very interesting. I'd like to continue discussion with you. Would you like to have coffee? You know, do you want to come up to, our room, uh-huh. to my room to have coffee?
Ooh.
Right? So.
To my room, that's a little
right.
forward.
Right, so he might have been just propositioning her for sex or whatever, but hot he might coffee. Have just been like a shy guy asking
yeah.
her,
yeah.
right? Just in the most polite way he could think of to ask her to continue mm-hmm. conversation to basically
or maybe
hit on
it's
her.
It's just like not a sort of semi-inelegant way of asking somebody out on a date.
And, yeah.
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 Now, given other circumstances, right, she had a right to be a bit creeped out by it. You know, her complete perspective is this was at the, you know, end of a long day where she'd been, I don't know if she was down at a bar or some kind of discussion. It was like at 4 a.m., going up in this elevator, and so she's in a confined space, feeling kind of trapped or locked in with this elevator with a stranger who may have potentially, quote, followed her into the elevator, right? So there's these other circumstances where she may feel creeped out or, you know, worried about this guy, which are understandable. But also, you know, potentially from his perspective, he might have just been shy or whatever. I don't know. With those details, it sounds a little...
Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wait, what does this have to do with Richard Dawkins?
She posted a quote, like, or a video blog, guys, don't do that, and then explained, like, why that was really inappropriate of him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I understood her point, although, you know, part of my reaction to that was, I'm a little offended at feminism, becoming... going a little overboard to the point where any interaction by a guy mm-hmm. with just intentions with a girl that he is interested in becomes a potential rape.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because in her words and commenter's words thereafter, the whole situation became this, quote, potential rape.
Right.
Right?
Hmm.
And so that was... So the discussion, you know, began at this really, really, like...
Innocuous
yeah. beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But her quote was, guys, don't do that, blah, blah, blah. Right? And I was a tiny bit offended by that. But mm-hmm. there could have been a nuanced discussion. But instead, Richard Dawkins posted a quote because he just did this conference with her that day. Mm-hmm. Right? So he was checking up on people's blogs and stuff. At some point, he posted a comment that was this really harsh response comparing... You know, her whining about this situation to much worse, you know, atrocities against women elsewhere in the world.
Okay.
And, you know, then it just went back and forth. Like, you know, why are you using basically a fallacy, you know, that she doesn't have the right to complain about something minor, right? If you just compare it to something much worse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then him saying, well... It wasn't even minor. It was zero. It was like not mm-hmm. an offense at all. And they couldn't have this nuanced discussion about whether or not it was a little bit like inappropriate of him or
because it was on the internet.
Not, because it was on the internet.
Yeah. Right. The internet ruins every discussion.
Right. So she ended up like boycotting him, but not starting an organized boycott. Just like, and then all these other.
Yeah. It's not like the ending to a popular video game. Which is important. That's what you boycott. That's what you start funds for.
Anyway, so the result is nuanced. I mean, yeah. You know, in that situation, she had a right to feel potentially, you know, at least uncomfortable, but maybe even threatened, right? But Richard Dawkins shouldn't have, like, overblown it with this harsh comparison. And then the argument didn't have to escalate from there.
Right. Mm.
And the best, I just want to reference this really quickly, the best coverage of this that I found is by this guy named Michael Duff of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal in Texas. And he references the whole incident as this, quote, three people who abused their power, essentially by accident. And he references the guy in the elevator, and then Rebecca Watson, and then Richard Dawkins, and how they all have their own type of power in their different situations, mm-hmm. and they all kind of abuse their power by accident.
It's also interesting
in the repercussions.
Because, it's like abusing your power by accident. It's like you derive power from one area, and then it's sort of any time that you speak, it's taken as, you know, shedding light on whatever that area is. So Richard Dawkins is, you know, a bioevolutionist, you know, a scientist and, you know, preeminent atheist writer. And so he had said something over here in this other area to do with potentially feminism, but more just sort of interaction between people. And then it sort of is seen to have, you know, have bearing on and have come from, this scientist and atheist background. And that's probably true for everybody in the situation, you know, and there is a ton of nuance there. And from the outside, it's really easy to say like, oh, that guy's a jerk. And therefore I no longer believe anything that he says. Like,
yeah. You know, and I kind of go both ways on the fact
internet
that
is a bitch when it comes to that
like,
stuff.
Like, how, you know, on one hand, how did he not know that if he said something on a blog in that space, that, you know, any other dude, any other schmo could have said that, and it wouldn't have exploded because they had no reputation, right. They weren't taken as seriously.
But then, like, shouldn't Richard he Dawkins be allowed to? It. Shouldn't he be allowed to express his opinion on other stuff?
Right, and that's the other hand, is that he shouldn't be hampered by the fact that he is Richard Dawkins and he can't express his opinion. But I think it's a little naive for him to think that what he said could not potentially take on a bigger arena than a random schmo saying that. You know, his reputation precedes him, whereas, you know, XXX Vanity Angel 565, you know, maybe not so much. So.
Cool.
Interesting. Anyway.
Dickie D, watch yourself.
Yeah.
Dickie D.
Interesting. games. I kind of decided to quit Terra.
I thought you were going to say quit games.
I'm over. I'm out. This podcast is bullshit.
Last one's nice. Late. I need Josh.
Microphone
drop sound.
They sound like they might be fixing one of my primary problems with it soon, you know, in quotes, by giving,
that it doesn't take place in space.
By
no,
giving
that's my issue
the
with it.
Warrior DPS class, like, better tanking options, but it still doesn't fix the problem with the other classes. Anyway, all the talk about Terra and everything recently, I think I've mentioned, reminded me how much I missed Rift and how perfect Rift was in a lot of ways. So I hopped back into Rift real quick. And followed my guild around. Did I tell you this? So I logged in, and it's all your guild moved.
Oh, right.
So
yeah. You did mention
transfer
that.
Servers. Transferred servers, logged in, guild moved.
Oh,
so
weak.
They offer, like, free character transfer between servers, but, like, once every 7 days. Oh. So I had to put in a ticket to move a server again. They reset my timer. Moved. I got into that new server, logged in. The guild message was like, we merged with this other guild. So I had to find that guild, found some people online from that, joined that, and then eventually got in touch with a handful of people I used to play with like 6 months ago. And then actually very, very quickly and easily hopped in and into a raid with them. And it was really fun. And so I just played for one night, and they are way ahead of me. But I was not so undergeared that I couldn't participate. But I'm not going to instantly become hardcore or anything. But then conveniently, the exact same week, they announced the raid expansion this fall. And I'm super excited about. And that will be the opportunity for everyone to get back on a level playing field for the endgame content again. Because they push the level cap 10 levels up. And they do the thing where, you know, as soon as you reach level 51, all the green quest gear, I'm sure, starts overpowering your your elite like raid gear. Anyway,
cool.
Rift is so good in some ways. played some more Diablo 3. I was told that the reason that the game is so easy is that the monk is OP, and he's just like this tank that does great damage, and so I should play the hardest classes to play. So I played, but what I've heard are the hardest classes to play, which are the Demon Hunter and the Witch Doctor, and they are more squishy, right? And so the game is more interesting. Because you actually have to
more of a challenge.
Like drop,
they die faster, folks.
You actually have to drop like snare traps and kite, you know, with the Demon Hunter. Mm-hmm. And with the Witch Doctor, you have to not get surrounded because you don't have many escape type abilities.
Witch Doctor is basically like a summoning class.
Yeah, Witch Doctor is pretty much the only summoning class. I think Wizard gets something at some point, but Witch Doctor is totally focused on summoning all kinds of shit.
Was he sort of like the old Necromancer class?
Nothing is a total trope. The Witch Doctor is pretty unique that they summon all kinds of weird animals and monsters.
It's like voodoo style.
So, like, their primary attack is either a poison dart or throwing a glass bottle full of spiders. And when you throw your left click, your main ability, right?
Spider bottle.
So when you drop these spider bottles... like these
Molotov
each time you click it, like three or four spiders run out and only exist for like 4 seconds, and they're very, very weak.
Right.
But when you spam click it, you've just got like tons of spiders out, like at least a dozen or so, depending on how many times you can click the speed of your weapon, right, before they disintegrate. And then you also, like, the primary ability option later becomes summon frogs.
Exploding frogs.
Like frogs that leap out in front of you. Or you get like a pack of dogs and you get these three dogs that run around with you that are kind of like tanks, or these fire bats, you shoot like fire bats out of your hand, but that's kind of just like a frontal damage spell.
That's what that is. The rest of it though, Cerse.
Fire bats are dumb bullshit.
There's tons of them.
Exploding frogs. Yeah,
I was told that's the worst class, but
worst
I
worst or hardest?
Worst.
Oh, okay. Or both?
Both.
Okay.
But I actually like that one a ton, and
of course you do.
Yeah, that one's it's not the worst. It's awesome. They actually do crazy damage if you learn how to use them right. They have this spell where you absorb or you like multiply your intellect based on how many guys are right next to you.
Huh.
So what you need to do is run into groups of mobs and use that immediately, and then start casting your other spells, and then they all have just this enormous intellect bonus.
Cool.
So. That one's great because it scales difficulty. Your power scales based on how many dudes you're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. So the harder the situation, the stronger you become. So that one actually is really, really well balanced and awesome. Anyway, that game's fun.
Cool.
But it's still just like
still farming clicking. People.
and Mass Effect 3 multiplayer came out this week, the second DLC. Yes.
That was fun.
And there's some new classes and stuff, and that game is still great.
So fun.
Keep playing that.
I did not get a chance to play that.
You should.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think you would. You wouldn't regret it. Nope.
You wouldn't regret.
You would not regret
going back.
No, you would not regret playing it.
All right. So
you
let's
would not regret.
Let's
playing
do
it.
Mailbag.
Sweet.
We can do mailbag.
Let's do mailbag.
Our mailbag has an envelope in it.
Are we gonna have a mailbag jingle?
I will try to. Sure.
No.
Mailbag, mailbag, we're going to open the mailbag, mail.
All right, you guys are going to do that every week from now on.
Mail.
All right, we got an email from a gentleman named Martine in San Diego.
The hell you say?
Who's that?
Martine? Ah, that sounds French or something. What is that?
Anyway, he commented on our discussion last week. About best game ever and about, experiences online with random people and in online games. And send us, did you guys have a chance to listen to the BBC podcast he linked about girls in gaming? And
no.
No?
I don't.
Freaking riveting. You should. What's wrong with you?
Well, we have a podcast. Why do I need other ones?
You're right. It's terrible.
I just listen to ours all the time.
But I actually, I was already a bit familiar with that. You've probably already been a bit familiar with
it. Sounds like an article I've read.
Some of the references, but it was really more like a 30-minute comprehensive report on a bunch of different things, including our discussion about the fighting game community uproar that one a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But also just in general, Xbox Live chatter and how terrible that. And then Xbox Live policies regarding like how easy it is to report and then how effective they are at actually banning those people when their comments are really terrible, you know, completely over the line. And it sounds like Xbox or Microsoft is not doing enough, you know, and in general, you know, it seems like a lot of people's opinion is that
It's pretty bad.
Chatter on, on Xbox is pretty terrible. Not just messages, but also voice.
Does this never happen on PlayStation?
You know, it happens everywhere. Yeah, and, and there are these
no one
blogs.
Ever talks about that.
I forgot the blogs, but there's this one blog you guys may be familiar with where it's just...
Kotaku? Yeah.
It's just posts of people saying horrible, like, misogynist or racist things.
Oh, you mean the internet?
On,
yeah, I've been there.
Game, like, chat programs. So it's, like, dominated by Xbox, but some stuff from PlayStation or Steam or whatever.
I think Xbox Live as a unified...
Obscene Wii friend codes.
As a unified service... That's funny. As a unified service existed before... There was no equivalent on PlayStation 2. So it sort of got that reputation early and maybe stuck with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think anywhere that games are played by prepubescent and pubescent boys, like...
Yeah, I think... girls don't swear, ever.
I think Xbox is just really just the dominant platform.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's really an internet problem. Yeah. It's, you know... With anonymity.
It's the Gabe's greater internet fuckwad theory.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Yeah, like anonymity. Plus anonymity.
Yeah.
Equals,
I don't recall what it
equals
is.
Equals shitcock or something. Yeah. Hubris plus internet plus anonymity or something.
Yeah, totally true. Anyway, that was interesting. If you guys didn't listen to it, we don't have to talk about it a ton. But there's basically one question. In light of... Josh's greatest game never quite made yet proposal. Are you basically just hoping that people will play, will just not be douchey? Like, how to combat that problem, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, do we basically have any better solutions than, you know, just good management? Like, how
banning,
could Xbox...
Banning people?
If Xbox just banned people more quickly... Would that help to solve that problem?
My solution for that problem is just to mute everybody. Like, I don't hear people unless they are in my party.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like the answer to that
is... I think that's sort of a bad thing, but...
Well, but my answer is just to play private games, you know? I just play with people I know, and I... Because I know that it's an... You know, it's the Wild Wild West out there otherwise, and... You have to expect that the worst of man may show up, so I'll play with people I know, and I'm less likely to have that. I mean, how else do you really combat that? You can't wield the banhammer 100% of the time, and you can't eradicate human evil and stupidity and obscenity. You just can't.
Okay.
You should try, but you're never going to get rid of it.
I know what
all.
You're saying. Let me give you the example posed in the BBC podcast. Basically, a girl... who likes to game, who wants to game socially online, who is faced with, you know,
constant
horrible,
as soon as she
horrible
shows up.
Obscenities and misogyny at least daily, but who sometimes, you know, interacts with mature people,
right, like ourselves,
and has good experiences, right? Like, my best example is that in Terra, on the random server I got into, our PvP server, the chat log was just full of terrible things. But my last experience in Rift on an RP server was generally that people were more mature, and I did find a really mature guild to then be like in community with.
Yeah,
right. Relatively mature guild. So, is there like, are you saying that girl just shouldn't play Halo? Or is there some way, or not play Halo socially, or to just not plug in the headset and mute everyone? Or is there some way for her to interact with people on the internet and be a little safer.
It's a real problem. I mean, the things that you can think of are, you know, sort of tiering those systems, or sort of community feedback methods, where if enough people vote somebody as being, you know, like a jerk, like you get a thumbs down or whatever. You get enough thumbs down, then you only get paired with people, like a matchmaking service based on skill. You only get matchmade with people who are also jerks, and people have lots of thumbs up as being like nice to play with, you know, good person, mature. They get matchmade together, right? That's kind of the best option I can think of.
And yeah,
just try to use the same game logic that matches people of similar skills to match people of similar niceness.
Right. And I guess, yeah, the only devil's advocate to that is that, you know, who, you know, I mean, that potentially invites exploitation. You
That's
know,
true.
People
yeah.
could just gang up on other people and get them tossed out if they don't like them. You know,
that's a good point.
So an appeals process, too, is necessary.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing that in general, despite it being this going thing that, like, you know, the Xbox Live is this, like, you know, horrible wasteland of, like, you know,
well,
evil,
you don't
evil
have
humanity.
To, you don't have to keep it to Xbox. I mean, we talk okay, about well, Reddit well, comments.
Well, right.
And the same discussion is applicable everywhere.
Right. And I think, I guess, what I've done is, I guess, gotten harder to it. Like, I've become less sensitive to it because...
You are kind of a prick now.
Yeah. I mean, like, you guys are dicks. No. But I mean, I'm being serious. Like, I mean,
you just got inured to it. Like,
yeah,
you don't care.
Yeah, I don't think that there is a wonderful, like, magic bullet for this kind of thing. But I know that if you go into it being like, oh, everything's gonna be fine, and then someone calls you a fuckcock, and holy shit, I wasn't ready for that, and you run away, like, you're not gonna be able to face the world in general.
So,
you know,
bringing it back to, like, you know, the feminist discussion I was touching on earlier, you probably aren't constantly attacked wherever you interact online,
yeah,
for who
right.
you are.
Right, you're right. I don't deal with this. I don't
and
see this most of the time.
If you were, you know, would you think it was more of a problem? Or is there, like, some way...
It's possible, but it's... Yeah,
it could be improved, particularly for minorities or females, which, you know, are not really a minority, but they still get horribly attacked on Reddit comments.
Yeah.
I just saw this one the other day. It was, like, I think it was a high school girl exploding a bubble in her hand with fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a science experiment.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Totally cool picture on Reddit. And then, like, two of the comments were interesting. And then there were some deleted comments where someone had posted personal information and made attacks. And then there was a whole discussion about, you know, how horrible those deleted comments were. I didn't actually get to see them because they were already taken care of. You know, for the later folks that look at this shit a day later, 12 hours later.
Or five minutes later, usually.
Really. Yeah, I don't know how
it
that
doesn't take
that
very
happened.
Long for that
but mods,
process
mods
to happen.
Jumped in yeah. and attempted to... But then there were still remaining ones that are totally offensive.
Yeah.
As you know.
Yeah.
Right? The only reason that some of those got deleted is because they broke rules. And so the terms of service are like the what are they called? You know, the rules.
Yeah,
for
posting personal information or personal attacks are not allowed.
Yeah, I mean, those are
yeah.
highly relevant, and those could
yeah.
be written more strictly and such.
Yeah, and I don't think that we shouldn't do it. I think that we should attack it, but I definitely don't have... I really don't know what you can do to actually fix this. This feels like a problem with society. This is not a problem with internet or internet gaming or women on the internet. This is just a problem with... I mean, it is a reflection of society, of a probably really a maybe not that big of a part of society. It's probably more of a compacted demographic that is on Reddit or is on Xbox Live, even though gaming has gotten more, you know, accessible. But it's like, you know, how do you get, I don't know, maybe a bunch of prepubescent 12-year-old boys to not call girls' names or I you know, how do you get that? I don't know. Has anybody solved that in humanity?
Extent,
no.
You know, to some extent, during listening to this BBC thing and this hypothetical of a girl playing Halo at night or something on online, I was thinking, you know, what other situations might she go into in real life, not online, where she'd encounter similar hate? And, you know, high school sports are segregated by
yeah.
sex, right? Mm-hmm. If I mean a close equivalent is her like going to play baseball or something and being on a baseball team of all boys, and she'd probably get right. very similar treatment. It'd probably be very difficult. And their solution there is completely segregate.
So the sport thing is an interesting one because you basically have at least an ostensible, and there's probably some overlap, like the worst male sports players are probably not as good as the best female sports players, but generally speaking, there's a skills, just like a physical separation between the capabilities of the players, right? Like female wrestlers should not wrestle against male wrestlers. They just won't be able to compete. So they separate them. They have separate classes for that reason, for sporting reasons. But you're right, if she were to be on that team, she probably would get similar treatment. And I think a more appropriate example in that case is gay players, right? A gay male player on would get, incredibly, of course, there are a bunch of closeted high school players, and every so often somebody gets outed and then they get, beat up by the other members of the team and it makes a news story. And, this happens in, the NFL. They always talk about, or how many gay players are there, and people will play and then come out after they retire and stuff like that. There is a whole community, like the website Gay Gamer. There's a whole community of people who like to play games who are gay and who just receive constant homophobia when you play. Like, that's just the immediate go-to insult if somebody kills you in Call of Duty.
Right. We didn't mention that also, but obviously, listening to the girls' experience, we're all thinking that the gay expletives that get used constantly on those
and
things.
I was going to say that there are some games in some communities that kind of segregate out in terms of, like, that are generally thought of as nicer, right? Like, if you go and play Settlers of Catan or Carcassonne on XBLA,
I was gonna say Scrabble.
You're unlikely to have people, using racist epithets at you. But
I don't know. What was it? Uno, that had...
Oh, that's right.
Somebody that was on the internet.
Pretty
though.
Terrible.
Somebody
examples.
Took a photo. Uno let you post photos, and that was the problem. It's like one of the. You could take a photo with your camera, your XBLA, your Xbox, whatever the name of that camera was, the Xbox Live Vision camera. But apart from that, you want to say that, like, oh, well, just play the games that aren't like that. But that's also a shitty answer. Like, that means don't go play a bunch of fun games that you might like
to. Because Halo isn't exactly like
dicks.
Baseball.
Yeah, that's
Halo isn't something that wouldn't be able to compete at.
It's no good answer. It's not a good answer.
Well, yeah, I don't think there is a good one.
Yeah, I mean, extending it out to the wider internet makes it really hard. I do think some sort of matchmaking service basically based around community standards, which aren't enforced by higher-ups, but just sort of crowdsourced and giving people some kind of thumbs-up or rating system, that might do something to help.
Yeah, I agree with Charles to more summarize, like, the smaller the community, the easier it is to keep the peace. But basically, as soon as you open it up to more people, the more likely you are to get basically the bad apples that either legitimately feel who legitimately are misogynistic or homophobic or are just trolls and just get their kicks off of, like,
well, the problem with something like Reddit is that it's so easy to just create a new account,
right?
That it kind of doesn't matter. But I could,
well, yeah, and I don't think Reddit is a good small community. I think it's a huge community that has.
Well,
this problem.
I was thinking
I don't
you
think
could
that's an
institute
easy answer either though.
You could institute
that's kind of like saying quit.
Well, no, I was going
to
say
no. That's like me playing with a known group of people on Halo, not just going to the unknown pool of Halo players, which could have a guy who's homophobic or misogynistic. Like that, I'm just saying, the larger the pool, the more likely you are to get someone that is going to be like that and ruin your evening. So keep it small and known and crowdsource, and you have to build some trust. You can't just go out to the internet and expect that you're going to get the best of humanity. You have to be ready for the worst. Unfortunately.
So I was going to say on Reddit, you could use a similar system where I was trying to think of how you would apply that to Reddit. And I
like a subreddit?
That you could. No, I thought you could, if somebody has a low, is voted as being a jerk by the wider community, then they could, maybe if they post a comment, then they have some like time limit where their comment doesn't go up for 6 minutes, right? They just have some sort of. So they're not a part of the conversation. Yeah, they get some handicap, something that people would really...
And that already
happens. People value being part of the conversation on Reddit.
And that already happens with the upvotes and downvotes, because you can set a filter to say, don't don't show me anything below a certain threshold. Right. So if it has -3 downvotes, which obviously means that the crowd has said, this is a bad comment for whatever reason, you don't see it. And then you effectively mute them, just like you mute people on Xbox Live. So Yeah, I mean, it sort of works, but, you know, it's not perfect.
Yeah, all those tools, crowdsourcing, getting help from the community to self-police, but also stricter terms of service.
Smaller communities. Known people.
All those things help. All right. Yep. main topic.
Oh, right. Main topic.
Totally forgot what our main topic is.
Wait. What are we here again for? What is this all called?
What's the show?
I don't know.
What's the show called?
Oh, yeah. You're listening to The Escort Mission.
You ever wonder about why we call it that?
Thanks, guys. Let's talk about escort missions.
Yay. Main topic, escort missions.
It only took us 9 episodes to do this. All right. I wanted to start this off just because I actually made some notes. All right. Escort missions. We're called The Escort Mission. What the hell is an escort mission? So in general, an escort mission is a mission in a game, either a level or a quest or a task, where you're usually tasked with escorting somebody or something that often has either lower health or defense than you do. Maybe they have bad aim. Maybe they don't have any weapons at all. They may have...
they're not the you don't control onslaught them. Of killing force right, that right. you, the character,
You don't
are.
Control them, usually. That's a big part of it. And so they might have bad pathfinding. They may not, you know, go where you want them to go, and you can't directly affect them. Or, even worse, they may have a tendency to over-engage enemies. You know, like they will go attack somebody that you wouldn't have attacked. You're trying to sneak past them, and they open fire on their shotgun, and then they kill you because you didn't mean to shoot them. So that's generally what an escort mission is.
You actually just described them in very negative terms. Can you? Are there any positive reasons for having an escort mission?
Okay, you could also look at it as we talked about the importance of support classes earlier, like a healer or a medic or something like that. Escort missions could also be seen as you encounter someone who doesn't have, you know, the same defenses as you, is not as strong as you, needs help, you know, and you're tasked with helping them through, you know, a violent or aggressive area to get from point A to point B because they couldn't otherwise. So you're actually, instead of being the Rambo character and killing people, you're actually helping someone. And so it kind of engages your protective, caring nature rather than just your bloodlust.
So a way to broaden the scope of the game.
Right. And that's actually, I was going to bring up The Escapist a few years ago did an article called Escort Missions Suck. And, you know, so obviously this guy is already putting, escort missions on the defense. He found out, he talked to a couple developers that usually escort missions are created, I don't want to say after the fact, but they're created as sort of a alternative to a normal mission, which usually involves killing dudes to get to the end of a level or a boss or something like that. You know, it doesn't usually involve protecting anything. It involves slaughtering things or defeating something. And so they usually create them for a change of pace, you know, because it does get a little tiresome, you know, wantonly murdering people. And sometimes you want to help, you know, or you just want to do something different than shoot. So let's give you something that needs to be protected, that needs to be taken. You know, it's sort of an offshoot almost of, it could be of a fetch quest where they want you to go get something and bring it back. An escort mission is more like you need to go get that thing, but you also need to protect it. You don't just, it's not an item you put in your pocket and nothing can get to it. This is something that is actually vulnerable that you have to use your powers, which may involve murdering people, to make sure that thing doesn't get destroyed. So, you know, in theory, it's not negative. It's not bad. It's a different kind of mission. It's a slightly different goal. It requires a slightly different skill. You have to pay attention to something that maybe you can't control, something that has different, you know, an AI that you don't know what it's going to do. But
they have bad reputations and are sort of generally thought of, hence the name of our podcast, why it's funny to have our podcast named The Escort Mission. They're generally thought of in negative terms by most gamers.
Right. And the reason they're thought of in negative terms is because usually they come after the string of missions where you're like the badass and you're destroying things and you're winning and you're only looking after yourself. You know, you've got the missile launcher and the grenades and the magical powers and you're the hero. And then all of a sudden, you're tasked with caring for, you know, this Fabergé egg, which has no defense and you can't let it crack. Or this, helpless peasant who doesn't have any weapons and has no fighting ability and they can't die, except they may draw enemy fire and people are going to shoot at it. So all of a sudden, like, it's not really necessarily up to your skills as a player. It's up to your skills to combat the lack of skills of your object of protection or of escort. And a lot of people find that the escort missions in games put you in this position where you don't feel in control, and the AI of the escort T will run into fire, and you're like, I wouldn't have done that. Why did you do that? Or you can only take one hit and you die, or you keep shooting at the wrong thing. You're not being helpful. You're ruining my game because I now have to like look after my little sister. You know, my mom asked me to look after my little sister. I just want to go play. No, you have to look after your little sister. And so people kind of start to resent these levels and not look forward to them and wonder, why do people put these levels into games? So that's generally what escort missions are. My general feeling on it, you know, I don't think I'm going to go to the extreme and say I hate escort missions and they're stupid. But I'm not sure I'm going to necessarily say that they're my favorite missions. You know, they're not all that bad. Some of them can be annoying, but I think as a whole, you know, they are a nice change of pace. But the feeling, the lack of control, is disconcerting because you spend a whole lot of time having a lot of control over the game and then all of a sudden you don't, and taking that away from you can be disconcerting, frustrating even, especially if it means you can't progress through the game, because now it's no longer you failing at murdering dudes. It's you failing at controlling this thing that you can't control, and it like running into a group of mobs and them killing you, and you're like, why did you do that? It's like playing with a friend who sucks at a game and you can't help them or something like that. So I could go into a couple examples, but I'm kind of curious what you guys think about this.
I don't think they're innately bad. Mm-hmm. I think they usually get a bad rap because they're difficult to execute well, and I think it's just one of those things that when it's a little bit more difficult to execute well, there are more bad examples, mm-hmm. right? So if we go look up a book full of examples, you're gonna find a lot of mediocre to bad, but you're gonna find some really well executed ones. And so I think, you know, as a concept, it gets a bad rap. It just takes more skill and grace to execute well. Eco is a great example that we talked about. And the whole game is basically an escort mission, but it does it in a way that you want to be doing the escort. You want to save this girl, and the mechanics for getting her from place to place make the define the gameplay style. It becomes a puzzle game to some extent because she can't jump across the same leaps that you can or traverse the same terrain. So you have to leave her in certain places for a certain amount of time in order to get somewhere to open up a path, that sort of thing. And, you know, another game where they potentially executed it well is Enslaved, mm-hmm. where to some extent you're being escorted throughout the whole game, but you're kind of also escorting someone throughout the whole game. But you're basically her slave. I mean, she's got one of these.
She literally enslaves you at the start of the game.
Yeah, you've got a neck.
Yeah, hence the title.
It's like an exploding collar.
Yeah, there you go, exploding collar, and classic. She's like, you're gonna basically be my bodyguard, and you know, take me to this
get me
place.
Out of here. Yeah,
and that's done actually pretty well. At times, I didn't play the whole thing, because I didn't like the linearity and the pacing, and it was kind of easy and boring, but it's done in an interesting style where the way you interact with her and she does things for you, she's not completely incompetent. She has a skill set that you don't have, mm-hmm. basically. So there are other really good examples. I think it gets a bad rap. Charles.
Yeah, so another example that made me, you just made me think about Half-Life 2 and Alex Vance, the Alex Vance character, which would never really get put in the category of an escort mission, and yet you have this companion who is with you throughout the entire game, right?
Who can take care of herself.
And that's the difference, right?
Which is why it's cool.
So you aren't really escorting her. She is basically a fully well-realized a companion, someone who helps you, does have a different set of skills than your character. She can open doors and deal with the computers, and is basically used to advance the plot. Doesn't necessarily fall into the same category. And Josh, I think the two games that you just brought up, Eco and Enslaved are a bit of a special case because they aren't a mission. Because it's the whole game,
right.
It's different, where it's not a separate, you know, separated break in the action to do this other thing that's very different from the rest of the game. And I think that's where people get frustrated with escort missions. Famous example is X-Wing. It's brought up as one of the kind of famously bad examples. And essentially what that escort mission looked like was, you know, you're a group of X-Wing fighters. You're escorting a, you know, a group of, you know, a caravan of like cargo ships who have a bunch of whatever humanitarian aid or necessary supplies or something. You have to get them back safely. And basically you would get, you know, three groups of TIE fighters would show up and you would have to essentially just memorize the patterns of which ones were dangerous and which ones weren't. And it just took you a bunch of trial and error to do. And so that's what people dislike about them, right? If you're hamstrung by what you're trying to, by the thing that you're trying to escort, that's frustrating. Do you get frustrated, or does it actually contribute to a different way to play, a more fun experience?
There are definitely aspects that you could name about, you know, escort missions that are bad, mm-hmm. that make them bad. But the question is, why are the individual missions in a game more often, badly implemented, whereas the full-length escort mission games are generally well-executed,
at least in
the examples we've come up with so far.
Is it a question of just the player's mindset and having the big shift, or is it the developer's mindset that they've crafted a whole game as an escort mission, so they thought about it more?
Yeah. I think it's how thought out it is.
Uh-huh.
Like most concepts, yes, more well thought out is good. I was just going to say, as an example, the one that is mentioned in the article, even though unfortunately none of us have played this, but you can kind of get the gist, is in Fable 1, where there's a mission where you have to rescue a child from inside this big cave. So you spend all this time getting to the back of a cave, and you pick up this child, and you have to escort the child back out, except they're like the classic... You know, they don't have any defenses, they run into other enemies and get themselves killed... and so lots of people hate that mission. Another example is Red Faction Guerrilla. These are not nearly as bad, but that's one of those open world games that has several different types of missions. One of them is where you have to save hostages. So you have to break into a building, get hostages, and get them out without them dying, and you can't directly control them. They have weapons. They're not too stupid, but still, you are hamstrung by something you can't control. You can try to help them by clearing enemies out, but they're still kind of on their own not to die. Now, a good example is, once again, is a game based from the ground up. This is one that some people might not think of. Lemmings. Lemmings is a great puzzle game, which is essentially like escort mission the game. There are these guys that you can give different skills to, but if you don't, all they do is walk in a straight line to their death if you don't do anything. You have to escort them to the end, and help them, except that game is fun because the whole game is about that mechanic. And I think you're right, Charles, is that often A and B happens. Is A, it's a mission. We are talking about escort missions, not escort games, where the crux of the game is not necessarily to escort something, and then all of a sudden in the middle of the game they throw this mission which has this weird mechanic, and you're kind of thrown. Or also on the same tip, they're not really... you know, perfecting the game around this mechanic. It is one of many mechanics. So they, you know, may not put as much thought into it. You know, they're not going to put the eco level thought or even the lemmings level thought into making that mechanic fun. They're just trying to make it a little different. They're like,
let's throw something in.
You're probably tired of just shooting things. Let's do something a little different.
It's kind of like how vehicle or turret sequences in games are classically badly implemented. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the worst parts of games, because they require this whole other, programming skill set, the time consumed to build a whole different physics system or balance this gameplay style that's dramatically different from the primary portion of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sometimes they're implemented very, very well, but man, do you hear about turret sequences being everyone's least favorite part in all the recent shooters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, So something I think that's important that we've come to is that these sequences, particularly when they're AI controlled, and I'm going to bring up an example where they're not, really depend on that AI being good, mm-hmm. right? They live and die by that AI, and if it's bad, then it can get frustrating real quick. So if the you know, person or thing that you're escorting does something stupid, then you're like, this is dumb. This is getting frustrating. If they aren't at least able to take care of themselves to some extent, it can get really frustrating really quick. Actually, thinking about it, it's sort of a ballsy move now for developers to include an escort mission. It's kind of like, oh, here we go. Let's see how well you did this. It's kind of like they're throwing their development dick on the table. Like, check it out. We made this good escort mission.
You would think. But Terra just came out, and Terra has like the worst escort missions ever.
Yeah. Here's my development dick, and it's a small, tiny one, incapable of satifying anyone.
Let me tell you about one. There's this like weird magical unicorn thing that is somehow like poisoned by the dark side or whatever. You have to fight it, get it down to less than 30% health, then use like a potion to heal its
tincture, its perhaps
unicornitude,
mesmer or whatever, and to get it, you know, to be friendly, and then you have to escort it to safety. Mm-hmm. And so, first of all, you can easily just defeat it instead of knowing you had to use the thing at less than 30%. But then, even once you figure that out and you get it to go along with you, it walks so slow. It is the slowest thing in the world. It literally, oh man, I think it took more than 15 minutes, or it felt like it, to get like 40 yards. Oh, and it's just like walking. You're like, hey, there's a guy to your left. Don't walk into that guy. Don't walk into that guy. We can walk around that guy. There's tons of space. Oh, you walked into that guy. I have to fight it. And then it stops while you're fighting that. Uh-huh. Oh, man. It's
worst. You know, and a lot of these issues come up even in non-escort games, just where you have companions. Once again, live and die by their AI. Like, oh, my God, you just shot me in the face while trying to shoot this other guy. Why would you do that? You know, and it's just because the AI is just dumb. And it's
so,
you know.
Speaking of the AI control, and an example of an escort mission that doesn't include that, I used to play a bunch of CS, Counter-Strike, semi-competitively. And there's a game type. There's a whole game type called VIP, which is an escort mission. So there's some game types which are just like kill everybody in the other team. There's, actually, there are a couple game types. So there's both a hostage rescue game type. There's a plant the bomb, terrorist versus counter-terrorist, plant the bomb game type. There's a hostage rescue where they are AI controlled. I didn't think of that until just now. And there's one called VIP where it's actually a player escort. And the hostage rescue ones, they're traditional. They're not uber military. They're like scientist guys, and you're pulling them out of this, you know, battle zone.
Without their guns.
So the AI is bad. You know, traditionally bad. They just kind of follow you.
You know what?
They get shot easily.
The funny thing is, That was implemented with AI-controlled scientists, but it might have been super interesting if they were player-controlled scientists, even if the scientists didn't have guns or any special powers. They were just like slow and weak and had to walk and hide and
maybe,
stuff like that.
Maybe that would have been fun, but the VIP the VIP mode, the VIP is player-controlled. The VIP has double the health of a regular guy, because he's wearing a bunch of like body armor and stuff, but he has a weapon. He has a pistol, but he doesn't have, shotguns or grenades or these other, you know, more powerful weapons. And it is just as frustrating. And that is one of the most disliked game types. It's sort of interesting and fun, and everybody goes in and plays it a little bit, but it never caught on and got the traction of the other more traditional game types when. Because thinking through it, the hostage rescue ones just turn into just kill everybody on the other team. Like, it just devolves into deathmatch, essentially, because where the terrorists have a slight edge because they can kill your hostages, right?
Why wouldn't they do that immediately every time?
Once a counter-terrorist rescues a hostage or like has one under control and it's following them, you can take out the hostages.
Oh, but not before.
But not before.
Oh, okay.
If you just shoot the hostages while they're there, it doesn't. I don't know. There's some rules. But the VIP
rules,
one.
People.
It's sort of fun, and it's like it is a change of pace from the traditional way you play the game, but it can be just as frustrating. And just having, you know, quote unquote good AI, which is to say a real player
right.
directing the actions, doesn't mean that it's gonna be good. Because if they're not taking it seriously, there are definitely dudes who are like, oh fuck, I'm the VIP, I'm just gonna go run out and get shot so I can end the round. And it's like, okay, fuck you, dude. And then there are also people who are just like, okay, I'm going to be the VIP, but I'm really going to Rambo this shit, and I'm going to try to do good, and they run out and get sniped from across the map, you know, not on purpose, like really actually trying to play well, but they just take too many risks, more than you would if you were actually in that scenario. So it doesn't just depend on having, you know, good control of that character. There is something else that makes it fun.
Another one, briefly, this week in the Mass Effect DLC, they introduced a new random special wave type.
Oh, yeah?
That is essentially an escort mission. It might sound like a fetch quest or more like a capture the flag
capture type the flag-ish. Scenario. Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, but the gist is an object spawns that you have to grab and take to a safe zone on the opposite side of the map. And so the person who grabs it walks a little more slowly. They can't sprint, and they can't cloak or do anything like that, but they are otherwise still functional, and it's whoever player grabbed it. And so everybody has to escort, you know, that item to the safe zone and then do it twice in one wave. That's pretty fun, mm-hmm. but it is one of the harder ones.
But it's also kind of brief, you know, like that only takes a few minutes versus like a level of a game that might take 10, 20, maybe an hour even. Mm-hmm. So I think a reason why that doesn't ever get annoying is that it's kind of brief. You know, it's an interesting challenge that is over with quickly. So yeah, so escort missions.
Escort missions can be good. They can be
so
really
escort
good.
Games
tend good. To be better.
Tend what to be we've good.
Arrived at escort games tend to
escort
be
escort missions
much,
much harder to pull off.
But when they're good, they
can still be good when implemented well.
Can yeah. be, but are more likely to not be.
And maybe it's just the nature their nature as being separate and distinct that means they A, don't get enough attention, and B, feel like, you know, a different sort of a different game.
Yeah.
Something that I
not
wasn't
the game you
before.
Signed up for necessarily. Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
There we That's finally enough. Addressed the name of our podcast.
Yeah, we did.
Get off our backs, nobody.
Stop hounding us. No one who is hounding
us. We answered your no questions.
So that's the escort mission. That's long enough. Next week, look forward to a best game ever debate where we're going to fight over which thing should be best game ever.
Also, what are we going to do on our next episode that is awesome?
Oh yeah, is that next episode? Where are we going to do the indie game, the movie?
The indie game, the movie is coming out, and we're going to do a podcast.
Are we
going to
stream that through Steam? That's so weird.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that so awesome that it's a game, but it's a movie, and it has system
requirements? I think it's a download, though. I don't think it streams.
I don't think it streams.
Oh, well, whatever.
I think you just download it. Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It's not that
weird.
You
download a game, you download every game
No, like
on
Steam, it's a movie. It's not a game.
Right. I know, but they're treating it like a game, which is funny.
It calls it a game. It's got a game description.
It's got system requirements.
It's like system requirements.
To watch a movie.
Well,
YouTube.
It's probably like a 1080p download that's not going to play smoothly or something.
Right, that's true.
I don't know.
It's the first movie with system requirements that I know. That's pretty awesome.
How funny.
Yeah.
So if you want to take part or know or be aware of, you know, kind of what we're talking about, go download Indie Game the Movie, however you choose to do it. I think it's available through Steam and other methods. And then you will, I think, what does it come out? Tuesday?
Comes out on Tuesday, June 12th.
And we're going to podcast like
directly
that
after
day
watching
or Wednesday,
it. Yes.
Watch it, and then podcast.
Soon after.
Wait, June 12th. Then it's not happening next week. It's happening 2 weeks from now.
Correct.
Oh.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're going to skip next Sunday's
show. So we'll
show
be a little late,
record on Tuesday.
But it'll be worth it.
All right.
Sweet.
Good stuff. Keep in touch and view all kinds of links.
Yeah, send us an email at theescortmission.com. Go to theescortmission.com. There's tons of stuff to look at and click on and colors to watch.
If you want to buy the God Delusion from your Amazon Kindle, click through our link first.
Yes, and find out whether you think Dickie D is a good or a bad person. Make your own decision.
All right, thanks, folks. That's it.
Thanks for listening.
Boom, you've been escorted.